Good evening, Sangha. Can you all hear me? Now that I know how to turn on the device. I was having problems with the device a bit earlier. So tonight I am going to talk about why we should cultivate loving kindness and how we can cultivate loving kindness. But I'm going to start off with a poem by Dana Fald. Walk slowly. It only takes a reminder to breathe, a moment to be still, and just like that, something in me settles, softens, makes space for imperfection. The harsh voice of judgment drops to a whisper, and I remember again that life isn't a relay race, that we will all cross the finish line, that waking up to life is what we were born for. As many times as I forget, catch myself charging forward without even knowing where I'm going, that many times I can make the choice to stop, to breathe, and be, and walk slowly into the mystery. So, cultivating loving kindness. This is probably applicable to all of the four Brahmaviharas: loving kindness, compassion, appreciative joy, and equanimity. But I am going to be talking today about the brilliant advice in the Karaniya Metta Sutta. This is one of the Buddha suttas. And I think I said that earlier, right? This is from the Suttanipata of the three baskets of wisdom in the Dharma. The first one is the Suttanipata. So this is from that. It's the Karaniya Metta Sutta. So the commentary on the Karaniya Metta Sutta says that there are three purposes for practicing metta and the other Brahmaviharas. The first one is that it helps us cultivate loving kindness, and loving kindness reminds us about moral virtue, about just living a good life, about the five precepts. And that's really important. And it's really the most appropriate response towards ourselves and every other being on the planet. So the three purposes of metta are the cultivation of loving kindness. It also brings spiritual protection. That's a good one. We want our spiritual protection. And it also helps with the attainment of jhana as the basis for insight. And jhana is concentration practice. It's really, when your mindfulness is right in the middle of obsession and denial. It's right in the middle, and we can see so clearly what's arising and passing away. And in the five khandhas. And it's much less personal. You know that your mindfulness is strong is when you're seeing things arise, you can see them arise, see how long they last, and you see them fade away. And it's not really even that personal. It's like watching, I don't know, Good Morning America or something. But that's one way to check to see whether you have some concentration or jhana in your mindfulness practice. So the first reflection, the cultivation of mindfulness, is a reminder to cultivate moral virtue. That is, respect for the body and speech, especially as laid out in the five precepts for the laity. You know, that's one thing. We take five precepts here as lay people. When we sit with monks and nuns and other gendered monastics, we actually sometimes take eight precepts. That just means that you don't eat after lunch. But the monastics have something like 250 precepts. They have a lot of moral virtue that they live by. And actually, you know, having a lot of moral virtue is a wonderful practice to cultivate. And keeping to the precepts, we prepare our body mind for mental cultivation. The five precepts of the laity are the foundations for a wholesome human life, the ground for our efforts towards awakening. Yeah, you can't really, you can't have any spiritual progress without having a, you know, living a wholesome human life. You won't get any insights. Insights will absolutely elude you. The precepts humanize us, that is, that they prevent us from falling into the subhuman states where spiritual cultivation is impossible. So we cultivate moral virtue. Here's a quote from the Dhamma Nikaya. Think not lightly of bad. Just as a water pot is filled, so the foolish doing bad a bit at a time, that will not come to me. With water drop by drop, it's soon filled with it. So all of our bad deeds, you know, and, you know, let me start off by saying part of the other basket of Dharma wisdom is the Abhidhamma Pitaka. And there's 52 mental factors. You know, the Buddha found them and other, you know, enlightened people and highly wise people since the 2600 years ago, and actually right now there's a lot of free training on the Abhidhamma, and there's a huge amount of free resources on the Abhidhamma. Actually, Stephen Armstrong, one of our buddies, the Abhidhamma Pitaka that the Bhikkhu Bodhi, who I adore, he is so, you know, that's, I know I'm getting carried away here, but you should totally friend Bhikkhu Bodhi on Facebook. He is the most progressive Dharma teacher, and he's like our Pope, right? He translated all of the suttas, and he's doing some excellent social justice posts right now, so you might want to take a look at him. So anyway, I lost my thought here. So the Dhamma Nikaya has that quote about, you know, oh yeah, and it was the 52 mental factors, that was of the Abhidhamma. So the Abhidhamma is 800 pages, the Bhikkhu Bodhi actually translated it from Pali, and our wonderful teacher in Hawaii, Steve Armstrong, put out a 50-page, you know, reduction of the Abhidhamma. And all of this stuff is free. And at the end of the retreat, I have an academia.edu page that has free meditation resources, and I have like hundreds of things there that you can download for free. So don't worry about that now, okay? So what are the five precepts? And, you know, we're practicing this on this retreat. We see when we have an objective or a thought arises for us to do something that isn't following these five precepts, and we really want to see that. Because when we see that, and we see the intention for us to do these things, if we don't do it, we're actually weakening that mental factor among the 52 things. And actually, among the 52 mental factors, there's some that are there all the time, like contact. You're always in contact with something, whether it's my voice, or walking, or your own thoughts. You know, there's a few things that are there all the time. And there's actually, luckily, a lot more wholesome mental factors than there are unwholesome ones. And it's so helpful to see what mental factor is working in your heart and mind. And that's why, you know, we want strong mindfulness to be able to see that. So while we're meditating, while we're walking around, if our mindfulness is strong enough, we'll be able to see whether the opposite of the five precepts are coming up. And they are to abstain from taking life. You know, if you see that you just stepped on an ant or something, or somehow you weren't able to abide by to not take any life, you know, you would probably want to dedicate your entire retreat, the merit, to that ant. Say, may you have a higher rebirth, you know. So sorry for that. And, you know, not to undertake in other things. Or you might have thoughts about, boy, I wish that person was dead. Just to see that, wow, I see you, you know, hate. I see you aversion. And just to say that. And then to abstain from taking what is not given, not stealing anything or borrowing anything. And I'm telling you right now, all of my stuff is free, so help yourself. And actually, that's a wonderful thing about the Dharma. You know, the Buddha, and I love it, you know, the Buddha taught that we have to give it away free in order and, you know, just take what people have to offer. You know why he said that? Because if people pay us, they're going to want us to say certain things. Right? And he said, no, you cannot say what they want you to hear. You have to say what is true. So don't get paid, but, you know, if you want to give me support in Dana, please, you know, which is excellent karma, by the way. Dana is excellent karma. Yeah. So anyway, so don't steal, or if you see yourself wanting what somebody else has, or, you know, you could just see, I see you greed, or I see you, you know, wanting to abstain from sensual misconduct. And, I sat the 6-week retreat here for many years, and then I would go up to the first refuge and sit 6 weeks. And I had, you know, been meditating for decades, and I would spend a week looking at the person in the aisle up in front of me saying, oh, you know, and have this story. We got married, we had kids, we got divorced. And it was because I was, you know, engaging in sensual desire and the pleasure of that. You know, that's Vedana. Vedana is the second foundation of mindfulness. And, you know, it's a huge, you know, it's a huge part of our behaviors. We always want pleasant things and we're always run away from unpleasant things. So to abstain from sensual misconduct. So when you see yourself having fantasies or, you know, what happens, you get bored and then you start thinking of really pleasant things. Maybe it's a song or maybe it's some remembrance of a movie or something. And a good thing is just to see the boredom. Oh, I see you, boredom. And another thing, you know, we didn't say this during the precepts, but Joseph told us this on the longer retreats. Do you want me to tell you this? Okay. He said, you know, to play, you know, to have your own sexual activity, not with anybody else, but with yourself. What that does is it actually reduces that energy that is actually part of concentration, you know. Sometimes that concentration can go over into wanting and desire, sensual desire, you know, in the body. But if you can let that go and say, I see you, sensual desire, and come back just to the strength of that, that actually helps you see clearly the arising and the passing away and all of the body sensations, the mind, the 5 khandhas, form, the body, feeling, Vedana, pleasant, unpleasant, neutral, perception. You know, perception's an excellent one. You know, whenever we see something, we think we know what it is. And guess what? You know, it's that for 5 seconds, and then it changes into something else. That's anatta. And it's empty. It's empty of any real existence. Form, feeling, perception, mental formations, those are thoughts. And clouds, you know, emotions are a lot of clouds. It's not just thoughts. I mean, if you can sit and just say, may I know the 3rd foundation, may I know thoughts and emotions, and see if you can feel the cloud that's there and see, is it pleasant, is it unpleasant, is it neutral, is it boring? That's one way to deal with that. And then to abstain from false speech. What's wonderful on this retreat is we get to abstain from any speech, which some of you might not have realized just how incredibly wonderful that is yet. When I go on retreat, I'm sitting 2 weeks in May with Gil Franzel in Santa Cruz and a month here in September. And oh my gosh, when you don't have to talk, isn't it a blessing? It's a huge blessing, yeah. And then to abstain from intoxicants, yeah. Those are not very helpful. Okay, here's another Here's another sutta quote. The purpose of keeping the precepts should not be as a mere ritual for accumulating merit, even though it does accumulate a lot, but that's not why we do it. It's not a ritual for accumulating merit or good karma, but as a training to support our efforts in mental cultivation and mindfulness, as stated in the Agatapala Sutta, Mahanama Sutta, and then Guttara Nikaya. So precepts are good for merit and karma, but that's not the purpose of it. The purpose of it is to see what mental states we're cultivating, to weaken the unwholesome ones and to really strengthen the wholesome ones. Yeah, doing these practices really strengthens the four Brahma-viharas, and then we have the 10 paramis, which is another beautiful training in here. So indeed, my various moral virtues are unbroken, untorn, unmixed, spotless, liberating, praised by the wise, untarnished, bringing about concentration. That's another Buddhist quote. Isn't that beautiful? My various moral virtues are unbroken, untorn, unmixed, spotless, liberating, praised by the wise, untarnished, bringing about concentration. Concentration is really a wonderful part of our practice. The second reflection promotes spiritual protection and centers around viewing when suffering arises. That is, from clinging to the past and not understanding present conditions. Loving kindness begins with our accepting ourselves unconditionally. That's an important one. And it's important that, and when our mindfulness has some concentration, some strength, when we see things arise, we're not taking it that personally. If you're seeing things arise and you're taking it very, very personally, you probably need to do some concentration practice just to make that mindfulness a little bit stronger. So this body is old karma, put together, thought out, something that is felt, and everything here arises dependent on conditions. I love that. One of the most advanced teachings in the Suttapanipata is the teaching on dependent origination. And it's beautiful. Actually, I'm teaching a retreat at Spirit Rock in a week where that's the topic. So I've been doing into that. So, you know, and what we want to do is, you know, these are a lot of concepts and ideas, right? We want to hear them, but then we want to see them directly, non-conceptually, in our daily lives. That's what we're trying to do. Because you can see, you can have insight into these things, and you'll see dependent origination and greed, aversion, and delusion, and its 20 manifestations. And but you're not taking it so personally, and you see that it's not personal. You know, the three characteristics are in everything. Nothing is perfect, nothing is permanent, and nothing is personal. So, I love it. This body is old karma. You know, it's old karma of everything that has come up. And right now, we're doing our practice to strengthen the wholesome mental states and to weaken the unwholesome ones. As sentient beings, this is another quote from the suttas, as sentient beings, we sustain ourselves not only with solid food for our physical bodies and food for physical senses, but also mental foods, that is, mental volitions and consciousness. And actually, yeah, the five khandhas, the first is form, feeling, the third is perception, the fourth is mental formations, and the fifth is consciousness, mental volitions and consciousness. But this consciousness is a discerning consciousness. It's the consciousness that says this is this and that is that. It's a conceptual consciousness. But guess what? There's another consciousness, which is where we're really all heading to, and that is just the knowing mind. Just knowing when, you know, just know that we're knowing. And that's a wonderful thing. That's it's also very prominent in indigenous tradition, is that we're all knowing from the same place. That's how we're all related. You know, we have these five khandhas and we're humans here. you know, going about our daily lives and part of the animal kingdom. And, you know, we are born and we live and we pass away. And we're knowing all of that from awareness. And awareness doesn't have any of this stuff. Awareness is universal. It is everywhere. And it's one way for us to connect to each other. Okay. So, we are caught up in a bigger food chain than we have ever imagined before. In our meditations, we will in due course discover a weak point in the chain of our personality and pain. That chain is dependent origination, a brilliant teaching. Breaking the chain, we discover our true strength and liberation. And that's seeing awareness. It's a non-dual, non-duality. Duality is subject and object. It is our animal instinct for survival. It's our survival instinct. I have to accumulate more. I have to kill this and push it away. And non-duality is just sitting in a place of profound intimacy with everything. And that's where we get. The third purpose of this sutta, the Karaniya Metta Sutta, is the attainment of jhana as the basis for insight. And loving kindness jhana, leading to spiritual freedom. The commentary says that after emerging from the loving-kindness jhana, the metta jhana, the meditator should discern the jhana factors as mind, nama, and the ideas of material form as form rupa, nama rupa. Nama is the mind, and rupa is material form. And just to be able to see clearly the distinction of that and not take it so personally. In this way, we are said to be not falling into views, that is, by reflecting that it is all only a heap of mental formations, no being is to be found therein. I know that's a very big statement, and I know that's a concept. And, you know, as we practice more and more, that becomes an insight. And we know that to be true, not conceptually. You know, insight is a totally different thing. I'm sure many of you have had them. Many of you might have been done other ceremonies and had insight. And you know that it's non-conceptual and it just permanently changes you. And that's what we're working towards. So remember, we're not following into views, and the views is that all of this craziness is only a heap of mental formations and no being is to be found therein anywhere. And you know, we can have that insight. And that's the insight that comes when you have very, very strong mindfulness, concentration, or jhana practice. There's 8 jhanas. And many of you probably know that you can take jhana retreats. You know, the very first time I met Anushka Fernandopoulos, I picked her up in Albuquerque. We were going to a jhana retreat, like in 1983 or something. They're great retreats, and you know, you have to let go of becoming the person with the jhana. Because all of these wonderful mental states, they don't happen to anybody. If there's an ego there wanting him, that is the thing that is going to keep you away from getting it for sure. You know, what we're doing is we're realizing our interrelatedness with everything and saying, you know, in order for me to know all my relatives and to be a positive force with everyone and myself, you know, this is why I'm practicing. It's not because you want to be a meditation teacher or anything like that. It's not that good of a job. No, it's a good job. So jhana as a basis for insight. Jhana Sutta, there's a Jhana Sutta, where it is shown how the jhanas, one after another, and there's 8 of them, may serve as the basis or mental object for insight, vipassana. Vipassana means insight, leading to the supreme, supermundane paths. And that is, you know, and it's interesting because that comes actually right after the 7 factors of awakening, which is part of the 4th foundation of mindfulness. But I don't want to digress here. Many of the older suttas often show how the fourth jhana forms a basis for the attainment of the 6th. In fact, for the attainment of insight, any jhana properly developed is suitable as a basis for such a development. Loving kindness alone is fully cultivated in meditation, brings us only to the third jhana. But hey, all of the doing Brahma Vihara practice and really staying with it, letting go of all the many unwholesome manifestations and saying, I see you greed, I see you aversion. And staying with the metta phrases gives you really strong mindfulness. Things are not so personal when they arise and pass away, and you're able to see them much more clearly. And the third jhana is nothing to be embarrassed about. The third jhana is an excellent level of concentration, of mindfulness. In due course, the meditator becomes virtuous in the supermundane sense of the attainment of the path. Oh. So many of you probably know there's four stages of awakening. And you have to have pretty strong meditation to get to the first stage, which is stream entry. And that's where the jhanas take you. They take you to the four levels of awakening. And it really does change you. You know, you have a totally different view of the world. So that was why we want to practice metta. And now I'm going to talk a little bit about how we cultivate metta, how we cultivate loving kindness. So in the traditional practice, the people to whom we should cultivate loving kindness for are as follows. We start with ourselves. And I think, as one of our brilliant co-teachers over here said, that I remember, you know, there's a story about the Dalai Lama and, you know, working with Westerners, and the Westerners saying, I can't do it for myself. And he's so shocked. He's going, what? You can't generate loving kindness for yourself? You know, that we really need to, if we don't start there, we need that to be one of our practices, you know, in the beginning. To cultivate loving kindness, we must ensure that we do have loving kindness toward ourselves, that we are capable of generating this unconditional acceptance of ourselves. And this isn't like, you know, liking or a manifestation of greed. This is just an incredibly wholesome acceptance of ourselves. In a way, it's almost a reflection of our interrelatedness, our interconnectivity. In Indian country, we have this saying, it's in Lakota, but everybody says it, Omi Takwiasi, all my relations. And that is, you know, one of the reasons that we do metta for ourselves, because we're never just doing it for ourselves. We're doing it for everyone, all of our relations, our two-legged relations, four-leggeds, the winged ones, the finned ones, and even the creepy crawlers. They're even our relations. So it's an unconditional acceptance of ourselves. We want to keep doing it. So we begin with ourselves, ensuring that we are not burdened or overshadowed by a sense of self-hate, guilt, fear, or any other negative emotion, especially from religious conditioning or emotional trauma. And we all have historical intergenerational trauma for sure. But I love this. You know, one of the most brilliant teachings of the Sutta Nipata of the Dharma is that, you know, conceit isn't just I'm better than everybody else. Conceit is also I'm worse than everybody else. Why? Because we're still thinking about ourselves, right? That is an expression of conceit. Isn't that brilliant? I love that. When we're saying, I'm not good enough, I need to be better at this or that, that is a manifestation of conceit, because it's still about I, me, and mine. And we can just say, I see you, conceit. I see you, self-hate. I love you. Hope you get better. Yeah, mana. The teaching on mana conceit is also brilliant. So self-hate is an expression of mana, better than, worse than, and same as well. You know, it's a becoming. You know, that's one of the biggest things in the dependent origination. You become. I mean, every minute you think about yourself or how you are in relation to this or that, you're becoming something. You're becoming Bonnie Duran, and, you know, this Bonnie Duran and that Bonnie Duran. It's amazing. Better than, worse than, and same as, all of those are manifestations of conceit. We must continue cultivating loving kindness towards these four kinds of people until it feels balanced. And those four kind of people, excuse me, ourselves, a dear person, someone we love, a neutral person. I'm always sending metta to the checkout person at the grocery store. You know, an indifferent person who's indifferent in our life that we don't know. And then at the end, someone we dislike or a hated person. But we will get through that during this retreat. So those are the four types of people we want to send our metta to. And when we do this, we need to reestablish. And when we do this, we're able to get actually to the fourth jhana, to a very high level of concentration, when we can, without a lot of, you know, aversion or greed, actually get that and do that. We can get up to the fourth jhana, which is a very high level of concentration. Even though we can attain loving kindness, a deep concentration with ourselves as a meditation object, we still need to include ourselves with others in order to balance the four types. To do this, we need to reestablish the fourth jhana. So this is assuming people are already in jhana, I think. When we are coming out of doing our metta practice, when we're coming out of, you know, doing the four objects of meditation and, you know, pervading, we can pervade with words, you know, may you be safe, may I be safe and protected from inner and outer danger, may I be happy, may I be healthy and strong, may my life be easy. And then we can come out of that and just rest in awareness, right? Anchor on the breath, on the nose or the belly, and just wait to see what is arising. That's how we go into Vipassana from metta. But on this retreat, we're just doing the metta in order to build that concentration. That's the third incredible, wonderful object of doing this practice. So what are the practice methods? So the first, or beings method, the first method of developing loving kindness is towards different types of beings. So we cultivate it towards, you know, animals and some plants and the birds. I love sending metta to the birds where I live. Let all beings be happy. Let all beings be safe. Let them be happy in their heart. We usually begin our loving kindness practice by mentally saying such words. This helps to overcome immediate distractions. And then you can use the words, but a lot of people, my dear meditation teacher up the hill, the Venerable Anālio, and on my academia.edu page, I have a link to his hundreds of free publications and books and his free downloadable guided meditations for you all, too. They're all free. He's giving that as Donna. And I will give you a link to all of those. He likes to do it as a pervading. He likes to feel the metta, the love in his heart, and pervade, because it actually is it's a real thing. I mean, it is an energy. I mean, we were talking before about sitting with some monks that are pretty well, almost fully enlightened, and as soon as you get in their presence, you feel like they're hugging you. It's beautiful. And as soon as you get in their presence, you go into deep samadhi, you go into deep concentration, because they're pervading that. So it's a real thing. It's not just something that we make up in our own bodies. It's a concrete thing that we develop and we can share. So what he does, Anālio and Suchito, we're talking about Venerable Chicho, all of his papers and books and guided meditations are excellent. They're also free. He, you know, he will pervade it. He will just stream loving kindness. And you can feel it. I felt it. I was sitting in an interview with him with my head down, and all of a sudden I felt like he was hugging me. I looked up and he was across the room. So we can pervade it. We can pervade it by imagining, just feeling the metta and feeling it going, feeling that energetic field. I like to do it to surround people with that energetic field from my heart, you know. May you feel my love. May you be safe. May you be happy. May you have everything that you need. And the three of us are probably doing that all day long anyway, with all of you anyway, yeah. So you can do that by just feeling the love, or you can do rose petals. Lee Brazington, who is a very, very excellent concentration practice jhana teacher, he will imagine that his love is falling on everyone as rose petals. You can do that. Send rose petals to your family at home or to your doggy, just sending love. And then the sutta says that we can also visualize certain happy events and feel their positive emotions. And, you know, hopefully after this retreat, you'll remember some positive events and the love and samadhi that you felt here, and you'll be able to go back and remember that. Yeah, you want to feel it very deeply, because when you remember it, it actually comes back. You can say, may metta, loving kindness, arise. Set that intention, and it actually will. We visualize certain happy events and feel their positive emotions. As we become more focused on loving kindness and what it feels like, you know, and it's not personal, right? We silently and fully feel it. The explanation continues. What is, in brief, the cultivation of loving kindness from access concentration. It's a very early level of concentration to full concentration. And that's what it's bringing us. Okay, that's the first method of developing strong concentration with metta. The second method of developing strong concentration is the social method. And this method of cultivating loving kindness is purely meant for dealing with negative emotions that have arisen when we are interacting with others that you can see their negative emotions. It helps us refine our social virtue and the overcoming of conceit mana. Loving kindness is the unconditional acceptance of others, which means that we should not measure ourselves against others in terms of being superior, equal, or inferior to others. And, you know, when we can feel, you know, I'm sure we're all in multiple daily situations outside of retreat where someone is mad at us or someone wants something, someone is greedy, someone is aversive, someone is deluded. And rather than have our, you know, unwholesome response to that, you know, which depends on how strong our unwholesome mental factors are, you know, if we develop loving kindness, we can say, oh, I see you, I see your suffering. May you be happy. May you have what you need. And you're actually able to do that without getting reactive yourself and watering the seeds of your own unwholesome mental factors and putting fertilizer on them. You can actually make the decision to offer loving kindness and compassion and joy and equanimity. So the Loving Kindness Sutta, and I'll just read this. Oh, the second, the social method. So that is not to just do it when you're meditating, to have that as one of the things that you take around in your life 24/7. And when you see yourself getting mad, say, I love you, Bonnie. I know you're mad. You probably have good reason to be mad, but it's not going to make you happy. It's not going to be helpful. Let's try to, may loving kindness arise. May self-compassion arise. So that is the second social method. And then the third mother method, the mother method. This is an analogy or visualization method that we identify ourselves with a loving mother's unconditional love for her only child. And, you know, that's part of the Metta Sutta, right? For your child, your only child, you feel joy and love. And actually, I think maybe during the guided meditation tomorrow, there's this wonderful teacher who does a benefactor metta, benefactor loving kindness metta. And he actually lives here in Massachusetts. And it's a wonderful to just sit back and imagine that, you know, think of your most favorite saint. One of my most favorite saints is this Mexican indigenous person, Tunancin. And actually, when Christianity came to the indigenous people of Mexico and South and Central America, The Blessed Virgin Mary, they named her Tunan Sen because she was like this incredibly wonderful female positive energy that the indigenous people had. And they would sit there and just let Tunan Sen love on them for hours. And you can actually do that too. Think of, actually, maybe tomorrow morning I will do the benefactor metta. And that can be a way for you to just get some healing too. It's a very healing, you know, you can sob after you get that. Someone who just loves you unconditionally. And you can feel that very deeply. That's the third way to develop loving kindness, is the mother method. So it is the phrases method, it is the social method, and the mother method. And in my last 4 minutes, I think I will just read the sutta. This is what should be done by one skilled in goodness. Having understood the state of peace, which is Nibbana, which is awakening. This is what should be done. One should be able, upright, and thoroughly easy to speak to, gentle in speech and not arrogant. One should be contented and easily satisfied, easily supported, with little busyness and living a simple life. Let's all take that in. Bonnie, take that in. Leave it a simple life. With the senses calmed and a wise and guarded mind, unobtrusive and not running after things, not running after families, not running after even goodness. And let one not even do the smallest thing that the wise would later repute. So try not to engage in any unwholesome activities. May we all be happy and safe. May all beings be happy at heart. Whatever living beings there be, or whether they are moving or still, with or without exception, whether they are long or large or short or medium or tiny or great, may all beings without exception, the seen and the unseen, those dwelling far and near, those who are already born and those seeking to be born, may all beings be happy at heart. All beings in all directions. And the social method, let none humiliate another. Despise not anyone, anywhere, and any way, on account of anger or any sign of dislike. So that was my beginning metta talk. It's a wonderful thing to cultivate, and cultivate it with everyone else, cultivate it with all our relations. It's actually already in awareness. We can look for it in awareness. May metta, may the loving kindness and my awareness arise. May I see it. You can set that intention because it's already there. In fact, that's one of the characteristics of why awakening is even possible, because awareness has loving kindness and beneficence in it. That's one of the characteristics of universal awareness, is that it's benevolent. Isn't that beautiful? Our real selves, our real not selves, I should say, are deeply benevolent and loving and happy. So let's sit for a minute. Any merit that we have generated by doing this meditation, may we all quickly become awakened in order to help ourselves and all beings in all directions be free from suffering. May we be safe and protected, happy, peaceful, healthy, strong. May our lives be easy. May we give love. May we receive love.